Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 7th of October, Anno Domini 2007, and you... You lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, all kinds of refuse before we get started. I don't know. Sort of rhymed.
Okay.
We'll start with the interactive entertainment that is Halo 3. Interactive entertainment will never be the same with the launch of one title. It has changed the way the world thinks about video games. You tell this was written by a fan. Halo 3 has captured the attention of consumers worldwide and has made history as one of the biggest entertainment launches of all time. This is the big part. Microsoft announced that Halo 3 has officially become a global phenomenon, garnering more than $300 million in sales in the first week.
Hello.
The critically acclaimed Xbox 360
exclusive.
That's
bigger than some movies.
Exactly. Bigger than most movies. Bigger than any movie. What movie has made more in the first week? In the first week. It's just, it's a cultural phenomenon. According to Bill Gates, who's the chairman of Microsoft. Don't know if you ever heard of him. No. It's also the most popular Xbox Live game in history, with members gathering to play in record numbers online. More than 2.7 million gamers played in the first week, representing one of nearly one third of the 7 million Xbox Live members worldwide. In the first day of launch, Halo 3 players worldwide racked up more than 3.6 million hours of online gameplay, which increased more than 11-fold to 40 million hours by the end of the first week, representing more than 4,500 years of continuous gameplay.
I know people that finished it by Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yep, exactly.
It's called No Life.
Now, for me and the other guy who doesn't do the games, what's the attraction of Halo 3?
I don't do games. I admit I don't do games.
We have what they call life.
It's, well, ultra realistic for a computer. The 3D modeling, the graphics engine, is just far ahead of many other games. And it's the multiplayer mode of it, where you can be playing online against other people. They got some really great commercials out where people are playing online, and it's just one where everyone's yelling in their own language, and just one guy there grinning that he's the one that just killed y'all. The really aggravating thing for us Mac users is that Halo was created on a Mac for a Mac by Bungie Studios, and then Microsoft bought them and killed the Mac version and made it Xbox only.
So right.
It was the first Xbox premiere game. And so now what I've been trying to do now, since Halo 1 came out on the Mac, Halo 2 hasn't been announced for the Mac yet. I want to find a used Xbox One and Halo 2, maybe.
Yeah, right.
But in related news, Halo and Bungie and Microsoft have parted ways.
Yeah.
Bungie is now spun off back to their own independent company. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen
next. So maybe we'll see Halo 2 and 3 for the Mac now.
Eventually. Well, Halo 2 is out for PCs. Probably for Macs in a year or so. That's the way things usually work. But Bungie's first big game was Marathon. And that really broke the ground for first-person shooters, multiplayer game. It was almost multiplayer only. There wasn't that much of a plot in the actual game. But it just got fun just, you know, shooting each other.
Right.
And it was just really, really amazing. But the other thing, too, is the game world is so fickle. They almost have to make all their money in the first week because, you know, next week there's another hot game coming up.
Right, and that's one of the problems that these things have always had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why there's such a huge aftermarket for these games.
Yep. Yeah,
once
toy,
you played it and won
really
it.
Really marketing the toys and game fuel. There's a soft drink,
right,
Halo
right,
game
right,
fuel.
Right, yep. Right. But I'm talking about the, you know, used Halo market. Once you've won the game,
you're done.
Who cares anymore?
Yeah. You go back and play it again, and it's a little different because the enemies do different things.
Well, that's the whole reason for the online.
Yeah, but you still know the basic logic and
right. But the online portion, you're playing against other humans, so it will always be different.
Yeah, right. I still like chess.
See, there you go. Well, a nice game of chess.
What's really neat is some of their commercials they've been running. They're panning through a battlefield simulation.
Right.
And it actually is a model. It's a 1,200 square foot diorama of a Halo battle, 650 hand-carved characters done by Stan Winston Studios.
Wow.
It is gorgeous. And they have a 3D virtual tour on their website that you can look at. Posted the link for since we're talking about it.
Nice.
But it's really, really highly detailed. You know, it's like the Civil War, Revolutionary War models that people have done. So they did a Halo model, and the backstory they've got is it was done in the future to commemorate this huge battle in the past.
Yeah.
And some of their TV commercials are old retired soldiers talking about the battle and how, you know, Master Chief saved us. And they walk by an exhibit in a museum of the enemy weapons, and they all get cold and silent, and you know, just we can't look at these enemy weapons. It just brings up too many bad memories. Let's move on.
Very nice.
Really, really cool marketing.
Very interesting. The marketing things are just astonishing nowadays. I have to say, still my favorite marketing is being done by Geico. They have so many different ads and in so many different genres and hitting so many different demos. It's just demographics. It's just astonishing.
I can't wait to miss the television show they're coming out with the cavemen, though.
Oh, I you know, as well, on my other hat, I am the entertainment critic for Wham. And
well, one of the guys is a local guy.
One of the guys is a local guy from Niagara Falls. Even that didn't get me past 6 minutes. I started to watch it. It was an utter crap fest.
Well, you knew.
It was horrible, horrible, horrible. It shouldn't last as long as the Sandy Duncan show, which was yanked in the middle of the third episode.
So you're telling me I already missed it?
You already missed the...
Yay!
Yes, exactly. If you're lucky, you've missed the entire run. If we're all lucky, you've missed the entire run. It's just utterly horrible. It's like, hey, kids, my dad has a TV studio. And my mom's got a lot of caveman makeup. Well, Let's go put on a show.
A popular commercial series. I could see someone thinking, "Oh, people like the commercials."
None of the people from the commercials are in the show,
and the commercials are 30 seconds long.
See, secondly, what works in a 30-second commercial premise may not, and in fact, does not work in a half-hour television show. It's just horrid, horrid, horrid.
Should have stuck to the commercials.
All right. We ought to probably take a phone call. What do you think, Rob? Rob likes the idea. All right. We're going to go to the phones just to make Rob happy. We're going to talk to Brian from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
My favorite Geico commercial has got to be Lauren Wallach, though. The go-kart.
Right. Yes. Oh, all right. That was good. I like the new one.
I'm going to put him in the wall.
There's a new one that looks like the 1960s Chatty Cathy ads. Yeah. Hysterically funny. Brilliant. They sing the song. They pull the cord. Oh, it's very funny. Go ahead. What's your question?
Well, actually, I've got a networking question. I've been having some problems getting my DSL router to talk to a new network card that I bought for my laptop. And basically what it's doing is it's connecting, it's lighting up. Everything looks like it's working well. I've got the cables. I've configured the IPs automatically, plus I've done it manually and every combination thereof. The thing it's doing is it's not transferring packets.
What OS are you running?
2000 Pro.
And you found 2000 drivers for a new card?
It was a brand new card I bought. It had the disks in it, and there's provisions for the OS I have.
That's kind of interesting. They're still making drivers for 2000.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, they probably just had them lying around. Might as well throw them on this CD. It's big enough.
It's actually it's a wire type for security reasons. I use it for business and things like that.
Right.
So we're using hardwire for it as opposed to wireless.
All right. So you get an IP address.
It does. It generates the generic ones that you normally get.
The 192.168.0.something.
That guy. Yep. And I have another computer. My desktop's on the same hub, and it's working fine, and it connects right up. I'm going on the internet flawlessly with it.
Now, do you get to see the intranet?
Internet.
No, well, do you see the other computer?
No, actually, that's one of the big things. It's not really identifying itself to the hub. And I've Googled it, and I've hit the net on this. Netgear's export was just a failure. It was just, I ended up having to hang up. I couldn't take it.
Can you ping this new card from another machine?
No, it's not pinging. Nope.
And something very low level in the card isn't working if you can't get a ping. That's
yeah.
Ping should always work.
Ping should always work because that comes right off the card.
Yeah, that
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to be doing.
Maybe it's a bad card.
That's what I'm thinking. If you can't even ping it, I got to say it's one of two things. It's either the, or three things. Nobody speaks Spanish. It could be a bad port. Stop it. It's either a bad port on your router,
right?
Or it's a bad cable, or it's a bad card.
Yeah, I spent about a week on it. It's not a critical issue, but now it's problem solving and it becomes personal.
Right, it's exactly. Just frustration.
I would suggest you return the card for a new one. That would be my first choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of leaning towards that, but I wanted to check.
Because if you're getting lights at both ends, you know, if you see a light on the card itself and then you're seeing a light at the hub, chances are the cable is okay.
The light is only one of the eight wires. The light is only one of the eight wires. I've seen that work fine.
Yeah, but
the rest of the card doesn't.
Even if you pick up another cable or switch cables, one that's working on the other.
Now, that is a good idea.
Well, I did do that. Actually, I did one.
And that didn't help?
Yeah, I do. Actually, even plugged in the modem directly to the card.
Right.
Yes, the modem to the card.
Then I got to say it's probably the card.
Mm-hmm. That's why I climbed the mountain and talked to the gurus before I spent $5,000 for the game.
Yeah, you know what the problem with that is? The air up here is mighty thin and we hallucinate a lot.
We have fun, though.
But that's... Thank you, and get that new card. Let us know what happens. All right. Oh. Wow. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 18 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. I love to watch Rob prepare to say his name because he always swings the mic out of the way because he's got...
You're on camera,
buddy boy. And if you think there aren't people out there watching you, there's 60,000 people going, capture, right now.
Now it's
going
to be out on the web.
That's right.
Your mother's
going to
find
shortly.
Out.
Yeah, I'll be on the web, all right. They didn't see what I did. I hid behind a little thing here.
No, not this time you didn't.
I merely just waved.
Yeah.
With one finger.
Yeah. I think you're number one too, Rob. All right, the major music companies won a key victory against consumer online piracy on Thursday when a jury fined Minnesota resident Jamie Thomas $9,250 for each of 24 songs she allegedly shared online. The case, Capitol versus Thomas, is the first time that the more than 20,000 legal actions pursued by the Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA, has gone as far as a jury verdict. In the past, the RIAA has settled with students, although in many cases, the music industry has had to defend its own aggressive actions against suspected file sharers. Despite the judgment, which totals $222,000, the case is not over, says Ray Beckerman, a New York attorney and vocal critic of the RIAA's tactic. A verdict of $22,000 for infringement of 24 song files with a total of $23.76, he said. It's an outrage, and I hope it is a wake-up call to the world that we all need to start supporting the defendants in these cases and the attorneys who are sacrificing so much to represent them.
Yeah, but the copyright owners can sue for treble damage. So that's $3 a song.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. In August, the RIAA continued its legal assault on suspected consumers of share music files, announcing that it sent 503 pre-litigation letters to students at 58 colleges and universities. The letters attempt to convince students to negotiate a deal with the music industry for less severe penalties. The music industry believes the tactic is working, pointing to data that showed only a mild increase in the number of households downloading music from peer-to-peer networks, 7.8 million in March of 2007 compared to 6.9 million in April of 2003, while pointing out that broadband adoption has more than doubled. The songs that Thomas allegedly copied included those by Guns N' Roses, Linkin Park, and Sheryl Crow. I can attest to the fact that the RIAA is sending out pre-litigation letters to students at colleges and universities. We had a student at RIT who got a letter like that less than 24 hours after he showed up on campus.
Don't the marshals show up every week or so and confiscate a computer and it's no big deal anymore because it happens so often?
It happens pretty regularly. We have just like with any school, you can't single out any one school or university. They're all getting hit in the same way.
Hello?
Kids think, you know, I'm at school. It's going to be fun. I don't have any more
worries.
I don't have anybody over me anymore. I'm an adult now. Yeah, welcome to adulthood.
Yep.
So that's how that works. Let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Sharon in Dansville, New York. Welcome, Sharon. What's your question?
Good morning, boys. I'm a long-time Pogo subscriber. Haven't had any problems until recently. Now when I get into a game room, if I walk away for any length of time, 2 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever, come back, on the screen it says, page not found, unable to connect to server.
All right, let's get down to the basics. What operating system are you running?
XP.
What browser?
Don't ask me that.
Do you click on a big blue E to get onto the internet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Internet Explorer. That might be one of your problems. Yeah. You can try using Firefox, which is another often better browser.
What is your internet service provider?
Who is it?
Yeah.
Localnet.com.
Localnet.
Dial-up or broadband?
It's dial-up, unfortunately.
That could be also some of the problem. The dial-up is hanging up on you. When you get this message and you type an address in immediately, can you get to that new page you've typed?
Or does it redial?
It redials.
Right. There you go. What's happening is your system, well, something along the line, is detecting that you've been idle for X minutes and therefore taking you offline.
Times you out.
Times you out, hangs you up.
So someone else can dial in because there's only a limited number of modems they can use.
I would start with asking LocalNet if there's been a change in their policy and they're doing it themselves. The second thing I would do, I'll tell you how to work around it. Set your email, run it in the background, check for mail every 30 seconds.
Okay.
That will keep the line alive.
Well, if she even does it every 2 minutes.
Every minute and a half. You really don't want to hit it every 30 seconds.
It's going to overwhelm the mail server at the other end.
Right, and that'll cause worse problems. So make it every minute and a half.
Every minute and a half, that's good. That way it's constantly doing something, but not every...
Right.
Okay.
And that should keep the connection alive even when you walk away.
Now, there is a preference in your dial-up networking settings for how long that idle is, and if somehow it accidentally got set to a minute or 2 minutes, you can change that back to say 30 minutes. So how long your computer is idle before it hangs up itself.
Okay, all right, I can try that.
But the easiest thing is to just set your email and then keep lengthening it until it actually hangs up again.
Mm-hmm.
And then shorten back, because really, to be a good network citizen and a good citizen of LocalNet or any internet service provider, you shouldn't check your email that often.
Ooh, okay.
So make it, just to save time on their bandwidth on the network and hits to their server and everything else, you should make it a little longer.
That may be why the dial-up timeout is shortened, because too many people do check too often.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it as long as you can, let it go as long as it can without hanging up.
Don't leave the computer. There you go.
Don't ever leave your computer, Sharon. Just do not leave your computer.
Well,
there's also the problem. There's also the old problem of multiplexing the phone lines. Maybe the phone company made a change so that more people can use phone lines, and now she's using a shared phone line.
Right, right.
Which you don't notice when you're on a voice call, but your computer notices a lot.
Right. Okay.
But I'd start with first I'd call LocalNet, see if it's changed with them. And secondly, I'd set my and find out how long they last, how long that timeout is, and then set your email to just short of that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 30 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm steering this car wreck.
You love it.
I'm Rob Linton.
It's 31 minutes after the hour.
The look on your face, Nick, was priceless.
I was just listening to music, quietly humming away, and then realized, that's our music. I should talk now. All right. Before we go back to the phones, Apple's latest update for the iPhone has angered a number of users after freezing modified or unlocked devices, and reportedly causing problems with unmodified phones as well.
But you got to admit, they warned this might happen.
They did? The update, they didn't warn about the unmodified phones. The update, which upgrades the iPhone software to version 1.1.1, fixed 10 flaws in the device's applications. Apple's also told users to expect the software would lock their phones if the device had been hacked or modified. It's not clear if the anti-modification measure is an intentional feature of the patch. It may not be clear to you. The thousands of open source developers who have put in cumulative tens of thousands of man hours into various apps and tools now have no way to get them onto the phone as well. The update has also affected users who have not modified their phones, according to a number of reports. Some users have started discussing a class action lawsuit following the update. Hardware hackers worldwide worked over the summer to crack the iPhone's protection so the device could be used on carriers besides AT&T, and so the third-party software could be loaded onto the device. If iPhone users do file a lawsuit against the company, it could be discovered whether Apple intentionally disabled phones. Last November, the U.S. Copyright Office ruled that cellular users who circumvent security measures to use their phones on another carrier's network are exempted from prosecution under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. In the past, updates have been used to disable hacked or modified systems. DirecTV used an update to disable cable boxes that had been modified to get its service for free. The countermeasure, however, merely blocked the cable box, which the company leases to the user, from using the company's service, while Apple's update completely disabled customer electronic devices which belong to the customers, which is a different deal. If you're leasing it and they disable it, well, fine. It's still theirs. They can do what they want with it. If you own your iPhone and they've now done something to change the usage of a device you own, that's the basis for a lawsuit.
Well, it probably says in the terms of service somewhere they can do that whenever they want. So the big argument on the nets has been Apple warned this might happen. So why did you load the update if you had, especially if you'd already hacked your iPhone?
Oh, is it a voluntary upload?
Yeah. Yeah, you just click no and it won't update it.
Well, I don't know that this is the people who are angry are the ones who modified. They knew it was going to happen. It's really the people who have unmodified phones that suddenly they're bricked. That's, I think, where the problem comes in.
And that can be repaired under warranty.
How?
You take your phone in and they give you another one, or they fix that one and give you another one.
Oh, all right, then. No, that's easy enough. Mm. Hello, my phone is bricked. Can you fix it? What's the first thing they're going to say? Oh, did you
hack
change
it?
Yeah. Did you hack it?
Yep.
Now you have to prove you're not a criminal before you get service. That's going to pork some people off too. Okay. And since it's bricked, you can't prove you didn't.
Yeah.
There's probably ways to figure out that once they get into the firmware, they can see if it's changed or not. But the interesting hacks is that you break into the phone and actually start sending AT commands to the modem.
How cool is that?
So, yeah, people are saying, oh, I remember ATA, ATM, ATM zero. Yeah. I remember those commands.
Commas for the pauses.
Yeah.
Yep. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Our next caller is Leanne from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Leanne. What's your question?
Yes. My question is, trying to get into my computer. When I boot it up, the icons show up on the screen, but it won't let me in.
What operating system are you running?
Microsoft.
Okay, Windows.
Windows.
98, XP.
It's 2 years old, so I take it it's
probably XP. So you actually get to where you have a desktop.
So I'm booting it up now.
Okay.
And it shows that I could have Home Edition or Recovery or something.
All right, select the Home Edition.
You have F1 or booting, and then it flashes away quickly, so I can't get it to do it. Then it says Microsoft Windows Recovery Console. Now, do I need to go into that to correct the problem?
Recovery Console? That sounds like you're booting from the CD.
Because
you shouldn't get the Recovery Console option unless you're running install
so
from
I'm
the CD.
Home Edition, then.
So, well, wait. Do you have the Windows CD in the drive?
No, I don't.
What is in the CD drive?
I didn't
anything?
Put nothing in there.
All right, when you're booting up, you were saying there's just two lines there, Recovery Console or Windows XP Home.
Right.
Now, when it's doing that, is it defaulting to the Recovery or is the Home one selected?
Home select. So now what happened, what's showing up now is my icons and I can't get in.
So you can see the background of your desktop.
Mm-hmm.
You see the bar across the bottom with the start button.
Right, and then when it's on the start button, the hourglass is on the start, but when you put in the icons, it's the arrow.
And it won't more or less latch up because the hourglass never changes to an arrow.
Right, it's stuck.
Yep. You've got an application that's trying to start or something else that's trying to do it, which is corrupt, and it never quite gets finished.
How do I get rid of that?
You may not be able to. You have to know what it is, and then you have to remove it from your system.
Yeah, the best thing to do at this point is to take the whole machine to a reputable dealer.
Try starting it in safe mode.
Yeah, try starting up in safe mode.
What does that mean?
All right, here's what you're going to do. When it's starting up, you're going to keep hitting the F8 key.
Keep tapping it.
Keep tapping and tapping, and then you're going to get a menu. You're going to see a menu. Option one is safe mode. Now, you'll select number one, go into safe mode, and it'll get into there, and you're going to see everything, and everything is going to be super big.
Yeah.
Because what it's doing is loading the most simplistic Windows that it can. No advanced drivers or anything else. What you want to do then is then go into Start button, go to Accessories, System Tools, and then you're going to see System Restore. And what you're going to do is pick a previous time, maybe a couple days ago when the system was working fine. Select one of those days and try to roll back to that particular day to see if this corrects your issue.
Okay. I'll try that.
All righty.
All right. Let us know how that works out, Leanne. Thanks. All right. Our next caller is Tom, who I believe has an answer to Leanne's question. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
I was just trying to give an answer to the latest. She probably has an HP, which has a partition for recovery disk built into the system.
Yeah, but you usually have to hit a special key, like an F12 or something,
to
get
recovery.
Into those recovery partitions. The recovery console is a separate part of the Windows install.
Right, but I believe they built it into there as well. But if she does that, she's going to end up losing most things that she put out. It's going to go back to original.
Yeah, right. Those recoveries, you got to take the time to read what it's going to do to your system. And a lot of folks just go, yeah, next. And then everything is wiped out because it literally formats.
Right. Thanks, Tom. I love it when people call in with answers to other callers' questions. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. The U.S. federal government took steps earlier this week to shut down websites in California in order to protect the public from hacked websites. But new incidents show that the problem is not going to go away anytime soon. On Thursday, compromised pages hosted by the Brookhaven National Laboratory and the Superior Court of Madera County, California, were still hosting inappropriate content. Brookhaven had links that redirected visitors to pornographic web servers, and the Madera County Court site featured ads for porn and Viagra. Brookhaven has begun an investigation into the institute, said Tom Schlegel, a manager at the lab's information technology division. From what I've been told, there isn't any evidence that there's been pornography on the server. It's all just redirect. Brookhaven is a U.S. Department of Energy lab that specializes in nuclear and high energy research. The government security office said on Thursday that it has revised its policies to avoid another possible statewide shutdown, but it defended its right to remove .gov sites from the internet. So we may be seeing a concerted effort to attack government websites, and they're being taken off the net to clean them. So they're offline for hours at a time. Our next caller, Tim from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Oh, Apple question.
Uh-oh.
My sister-in-law got a computer that was previously owned by somebody else.
Yep.
And it's got a master user of Carl, so Carl's computer. So she wanted to install some new software, so she created a user, her name is Irene, called Irene, and installed the software. And now she says she wants to just have one user. If you delete the user Irene, will the software still be on the computer, or will it go away?
It depends on what username you installed the software into.
I think it was installed under the Irene user.
Yeah, you can choose to install software in a specific username, so it's only available to that user. Or you can install it at the root of the hard drive, so it's available to all users.
Okay, I don't know the answer to that. So if you just delete the user, all the things associated with it that were installed with it go away as well.
Right, yes.
Okay, is there any way to, presume that you would delete the user, is there any way to rename the master user to be Irene instead of Carl?
Not easily. There's a 30 or 40 step Unix terminal mode command you have to do.
Okay.
Backing up a step, whoever sold the computer should have erased it first. If she doesn't have much on the computer now, she probably should erase it and restore the original system, so she's starting fresh without any of that other user stuff on it.
Okay. I think she's going to resign herself to using Carl's computer for the rest of her life instead of going through the 40 steps.
She can just make her own new user, make that an administrator, and delete the other user. That's no problem.
Oh, okay.
So as long as now...
But that other user's stuff is still going to be around, depending on if they installed programs she doesn't have a license for, they may not work right. his files would still be in his username unless he put his files in other folders too.
I believe it's all installed, purchased, legitimate software. So there's no problems along those lines. Just a question of making sure she doesn't lose any data. And to make sure that doesn't happen, you don't want to just delete a user without transferring the data to someplace else.
There's two ways to delete a user. You can delete it immediately, or it will create a an image file of that deleted user. So you can go and look in that deleted folder to see if you've lost anything before you actually physically delete the files.
Oh, okay. So you select delete and it creates an image for you.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you can go in there and see if there's anything you really needed.
Okay.
But yeah, word to everyone who's selling their computer, erase your stuff first.
Yeah.
Well, this is the thing that bugs me. People are constantly talking about identity theft and worried about all of these things, and then they go to sell a computer and they leave all their stuff on it. I don't get it. You know, First, depending on what version of an operating system you have, it may be illegal to transfer that.
Right. You typically have to get a transfer of license authorization from every program company on your computer in order to transfer that license.
Or you erase it all and give them basically a blank machine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe she has all the original software and all the stuff that I think like Microsoft Word was purchased and she has a disk for that.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's legal.
Oh, okay.
The original's owner has to get a license transfer request from Microsoft.
If it was even ever registered.
Well, not even if it's registered. That's part of the license agreement. You cannot transfer the license without approval from the license owner.
Wow. That sounds pretty restrictive.
Yeah, but the thing of it is,
though, that's very, very normal, though, yeah.
But the thing of it is, though, is, and, you know, not to get into the legal aspect of it here, but if they've never registered it, they wouldn't know who is actually the registered owner.
And that might be the case, in which case, just go on using it happily, and there's no problem. It's just Carl's PC. That's fine, I guess.
I guess that's the way that's got to work.
Now, Carl, if you're listening, you may all of your files, your banking files, your history, anything you didn't delete is still there.
Right. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Chris, Rob, Nick, you, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Brunson.
At 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites.
What did you do?
It's my theme song. Thank you. Oh, I feel so much better now. All right, kiddies. It's that time once again. Go get your footy jammies on. Grab your mug of hot chocolate. Sit in Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. And if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, this is one you're going to love. You're getting blamed for it, too.
Oh, here we go.
I love it.
What didn't I say this time?
Well, you know, I guess it's called selective hearing.
Yeah.
And I don't know what age it kicks in. I
think sometimes, daughter's got it.
That's what I mean. You know, I think from a teenager on up. We had one listener get very confused and said, well, we suggested this or to do this or do that. And what I'm talking about, folks, is there's a big scam going on right now. And you're getting these emails and they're saying, oh, your machine is infected and you got to click on this and you'll get this product, you know, and we'll clean your machine off for $29.95.
Yeah, the audacity that they ask for money is kind of cool, but.
Yeah, hello, it's not infected. You shouldn't click on it. And it's this one poor listener.
And heaven forbid, don't give them your credit card number.
Well, they were saying that Nick had recommended it. No, we hadn't said anything to this as far as the Advanced Registry Optimizer program.
Honestly, I couldn't possibly have recommended because I never even heard of that program until I saw that email.
Well, and the thing of it is he got spoofed into thinking, oh, it was only going to cost him $29.95. And when the final bill came in, it was $117.70.
That's the second scam.
And hello, folks, we've told you. You know, if in doubt, don't click on it.
Right. If you go to the Security Tango website and look at the stuff in the middle, I only recommend Adaware, SpyBot, CW Shredder, Stinger, and I tell you, you should have a good antivirus program. And if you listen to the show, I often talk about AVG and Avast. Yep. I have never even heard of this, whatever the heck it was called. I got to look back to see. Advanced Registry Optimizer. Never even heard of it. So I really, truly did not recommend this because I've never heard of the product before. And
people are getting spoofed into thinking, oh, my machine's infected. I better do as they say because, you know, they know they got to do it. No, they're doing it to sucker you out of your money. And you pay the $29.95 and it could be even more. I've heard of this gentleman a lot more. And they're responsible for putting an end there.
Right.
So how does one tell when one is looking at a scam that comes up on their screen? How would someone know not to click on this?
Well, in the
assume
first place,
everything is a scam and don't click on anything.
Right.
Yeah.
In the first place, if something pops up on your screen and says your machine is infected, click here.
Yes.
That's the first thing you don't do.
Exactly.
You know, I love it. I get it. And I'm on a Linux box.
But at least, at least for us, it's a Windows looking window. So on Linux and on the Mac, it doesn't look like a real window. If you're using Windows, it looks like a real Windows window.
Here's a recommendation. Change your color scheme. Then if you see something come up with the original blue window, it's not from your machine. Thank you.
Especially if it's a program you didn't buy.
Excuse me. Let me bask in that for a moment. That's a great idea.
If you've purchased Norton or McAfee or AVG or you're running a program and its window pops up and says there's a problem, you can believe that.
Right.
But
if
a window pops up for a program you've never heard of, don't believe it.
Right. And you've done an email.
Right. And if you change your color scheme and you see a blue window pop up, it's not your window.
Nick, that's a stroke of genius.
Thank you. I know it was a stroke of something. We're done. All right, folks. All right, kiddies. Wash out your hot cocoa mugs and put them in the drainer. Get your footy jammies off and put your clothes back on. We're going to give Uncle Dave a shot and put him back to sleep for another week. So that's the end of story hour with Uncle Dave. Thank you, Uncle Dave. Oh, he's already asleep. Sorry. Didn't mean to disturb him again. Let him sleep for that week. All right, doggone it, I've amused myself now. That's an awfully good idea. Change your color scheme.
Scary,
everybody go do
it?
That right now. And it's okay to be away from your radio for a minute because we are going to take a break. When we come back on the other side of that, we'll have the news, weather, and sports, all the things you really listen to Wham for. And then after that, we will be back with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Chris Wright, who has once again given up an entire Sunday morning to come in here and help us get the show ready. He's going to be putting he had an actual life this week, but he'll be getting the archive stuff back online.
Right.
Yep. And Rob Linton, who we have no idea how he wandered into the studio or who let him in, but we're gonna let him run the board for another little while. I'm Nick Francesco. You are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe at 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Gil Flink, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's on the radio, and you are listening to it. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about clicking on links in email. We'd had a story about that nonsense again. 275 of you voted, tying for number 214 on the all-time hit list. A four-way tie. Thank you all very much. The choices were only the 48% of you said only if I verified the sender. 21% of you said only never. 19% of you only if I think I know the center. And on and on and on and on. This week's poll is based on a new service that Microsoft has launched. They've launched an online healthcare service designed to help patients take control of their health records and monitor their medical conditions. Microsoft's Health Vault, announced Thursday in Washington, D.C., will allow users to store and share health records online, to collect and manage health data on a variety of home devices, and to search for health information. We all know health is incredibly complex. It has lots of information, and we make it harder than it needs to be, said Peter Newport, corporate vice president of Microsoft's Health Solutions Group. By making it harder than it needs to be, bad things happen. Bad things happen. Patients want tools to simplify their interactions with the healthcare system, Newport added. They want an information system that puts them at the center and makes it easy for them to manage their health and their family and their activities when they interact with the health system, he said. It's hard, but it's not that hard. It's possible, and it's possible today. The Health Vault applications, available for free on the Health Vault website, are designed to allow patients to share their information safely and easily with healthcare providers and manage their health issues such as weight loss and long-term diseases, Microsoft said. There are three pieces of the Health Vault. Health Vault Search, which is a specialized search engine. The Health Vault Repository Account, an encrypted online e-health record that users and their families can share with doctors. And the Health Vault Connection Center, a place where users can find plug-and-play drivers for health monitoring devices such as diabetes meters and heart rate monitors to connect to the Health Vault accounts. We need to make information reusable, Newport said. We're all frustrated by the simple, stupid things like having to fill out the clipboard at the doctor's office all the time. The Health Vault was developed in cooperation with privacy advocates, including the Bipartisan Coalition for Patient Privacy. Dr. Deborah Peel, founder of the Patient Privacy Rights Foundation, praised the company for privacy controls on the service, including the prohibition of data transfer without explicit informed consent. Microsoft's new e-health plan will probably be the largest, not affiliated with an insurance provider or specific employer. So that is the Microsoft Health Vault. So my questions this week, the poll is, would you use Microsoft's Health Vault? The choice is, sure, I trust Microsoft. I guess we really do need this. Maybe with the right assurances of privacy and, what are you, stupid? So far, 76 of you have voted. Overwhelmingly, 93% of you have said, what are you, stupid? And one person trusts Microsoft, and one person said, I guess we really need this, and three said maybe. When you're done with the poll, take a look at the yellow box underneath it. Click on the link that says, give us your opinion. It will take you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. You ain't kidding, baby. Where you can enter your opinion. So far, we've got 9 opinions, I believe. There's always one person every week who says, what is this? What is the Microsoft Health Vault this week? That's why God made the internet. They made Google. If you're unwilling to wait to hear about it on the show, you can always look it up yourself. We give you that right. We hereby transfer to you the right to look up things like this on your own. Okay. When you're done, take a look around at the rest of the thing. I do a newsletter. I do forums. It's only $15 a year. You get to search the old newsletters. It's a bunch of really cool stuff on my website at asknick.com. That's asknick.com. Thank you. So do that and then come back to the Soundbites website and join the wackiest people on earth in the forums, where they have way, way too much fun. And let us not forget that we're in the middle of the Soundbites chat right now. Not much going on this week. People are kind of desultory or however you want to pronounce that in the chat right now, but that's available off our links. All right, it's back to the phones, and our next caller is Jim on a cell phone. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Good morning.
Hi there. Hi,
I've got a monitor question. I've had a Mac for a lot of years, and currently I'm using one of those 60-pound Dell, worn-out, getting really dim sort of thing. So I decided to update to an LCD, a 24-inch, and I was on my way down, actually, to go pick it up. I was thinking, as I did some research, I noticed a lot of different monitors said PC or Mac compatible or both. And I was kind of wondering, what is it I'm going to want to look at? I was assuming that the DVI connectors were the same, but that may not be so. Is that correct?
No, the DVI connectors are the same. Unfortunately, there's several types of DVI. DVI-I and DVI-D are the two main ones. DVI-D is digital only. DVI-I has digital and analog on the signals. Most of the Mac DVI ports were DVI-I, so you could run an analog monitor on it as well. What's interesting, though, is there is virtually no difference between Mac monitors and Windows monitors, but it's nice to see that the marketing companies are at least realizing that if they put PC compatible on it, they may not sell it to a Mac person. So it's virtually every monitor will work on Mac or PC. The one thing that you sometimes run into is that Macs typically run at a higher frequency and higher resolution than an equivalent PC. So running a PC monitor, you may not get the best quality you could out of it if it's PC only. So it's more a matter of matching the specs of your video card against the specs of the monitor you're looking to buy.
They mentioned also, is there two sizes, a sub-D DVI and a...
No, the sub-D is sometimes called an HD15. That's the old analog standard, 3 pins, or 3 rows of 15 pins in 3 rows. There we go. That's the old old VGA, often cable called. Some companies call it a mini mini D or sub D or HD 15. Apple used to use the DB 15 connector, which was 15 pins in two rows, and then switched over to the more common HD 15 with 15 pins in three rows. And that's an analog signal. Now, one of the things that a lot of the testing has shown is that most PC monitor or monitors intended for PCs are analog and digital in the same monitor, so you can run it on either port. What you find most of the time, though, is they only come with analog cables. So if you want to run it digitally, you'll have to get a digital cable separately. Apple's monitors are digital only, and they're often a lot higher quality. So if you're looking for the best color reproduction, the best pixel response time, then you probably want to look at an Apple brand monitor. What was it? Anandatech, I think it was. However you pronounce that.
Right. Anandatech.
They did a comparison of the Dell 20 inch and the Apple 20 inch, and they found that even though they use the exact same 20 inch panel from Samsung, the Apple monitor produced brighter, sharper, crisper displays. And they theorized that something about the analog circuitry on the Dell monitor to let it do analog, even though it also did digital. Something that to let it do analog, you know, decreased the quality, the overall quality of the picture, which is very odd.
I noticed on the back of the G5, though, or my G5, that there's two separate, what appears to be DVI plug configurations.
Right. Now, you have to be a little careful because Apple's gone through several different video port standards over the years. The DVI connector is a parallelogram, and the later model G5s had two DVI connectors. The earlier model G5s had one DVI connector and one ADC connector, which was a different display connector. The ADC connector is a rounded rectangle. It's got round corners on it, where the DVI port has square corners on it.
I believe that's what I have.
Yeah, Apple pushed the ADC connector. In fact, it stands for Apple Display Connector. They were pushing this as a standard for cable management. It ran your video signals, your USB signals, and your power signals over one cable. So you didn't have so many cables sticking out of the back of your computer. The rest of the industry never caught on, so they stuck with DVI. So now on Apple's monitors, they have one cable coming out of the back of the monitor, and it splits into four heads. So you plug in the video port, the USB port, the FireWire port, and the power port, because there's FireWire and USB ports on the monitor as well. That's another feature you'll see a lot of times on some of the higher-end monitors. They have pass-through USB ports.
Gotcha.
So you have to be a little careful about which connector you have on the back of your Mac as to which type of monitors you can use.
Yep.
And there's always cable adapters if you get a different one.
Well, I had to use a cable adapter for this Dell, so I'm not familiar with that. But going into LCD, I thought perhaps the configuration might be somewhat different.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much. Before we go to the next call, we should talk a little bit about a couple of things. First, there's the question we had earlier about changing the color of your screen. It's really easy to do. Right-click on your desktop, on any blank area of your desktop, and select Properties. And the first thing you'll see is Themes. And you can immediately change the theme. There are several that you have. There are more online. So pick one that makes you happy, as long as it's not that standard blue one with the red close button. And then you will have changed the look of your desktop. And also, when you do get a window with that blue bar with the red close button, you'll know it's not real. So that's how that works. And it's actually pretty simple. All right, back in just a couple of minutes. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, who amuses himself with the smallest things. Me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. This is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
23 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. Oh, have I got a story for you. Not going to make somebody happy. Oh, Theosis is not going to be happy to hear this. I don't do good Apple news, apparently. An Atlanta man says his iPod Nano caught fire in his pants. A nearly two-year-old iPod caught fire in the pocket of Danny Williams at the Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport, where he is employed, according to Williams' mother, Elaine. The flame lasted 15 seconds and fire reached up to his chest, she said in a telephone interview. Apple Inc. representatives were not immediately available for comment. The company has since sent a packet to Danny to return the iPod Nano, she said. Well, that's nice. Glossy paper in his pocket may have shielded him from getting burned by the fire. The paper's all charred and blackened, but not the fire didn't go through it. Danny, it's some stiff card of some sort with some card that was behind it. If the TSA, he said, the problem is, he said, he works at an airport. If the TSA had come by and seen me smoking from his pocket, they could have honestly thought I was a terrorist and hauled me away, he said. The iPod contains a lithium-ion battery, which has a history of catching fire in laptops. Since December 2005, these batteries have been blamed for meltdowns and fires in several computers. Last year, several manufacturers, including Apple, Dell, and Lenovo, were forced to recall millions of the batteries. Okay, here's the problem I have with that. I tend to keep my iPod in my front pocket. Suddenly, I discover the wisdom of the belt clip.
I'm not buying it. The battery in a Nano or any iPod is just not big enough to create
the video. The one with this thing, I saw the video of the actual news story. The iPod is clearly has been through a fire. It's all melted and blackened and charred and melted and.
Being through a fire is not the same as causing a fire.
No, I understand
fire.
That, but the inside of his pocket has a hole in it, a charred burn hole, and the paper has a hole. Yeah.
You want to see what a battery can do as far as a system starting a fire?
I know
go
very
to my
well.
Website.
I know very well what the bigger batteries can do, but that's a tiny battery in the iPod.
Still, a fire is a fire.
Fire is a fire. Yeah, once you've lit a piece of plastic, all it has to do is light the plastic.
Well, if this story turns out to be true and it is caused by the iPod, that's the end of iPods on flights or anywhere in an
airport. Yeah, you aren't kidding. You aren't kidding. It's an interesting problem. So,
I want to know what else he had in his pocket. You know, that vial of sulfuric acid.
Piece of paper.
Match. Lighter fluid.
I once, I don't know why, I had a 9-volt battery in my pocket for some reason. And it shorted against my pocket knife. And it got hot enough that I noticed it before it caught fire.
Right.
If it would have caught fire, I don't know. What's the energy density of a 9-volt battery? It'll get hot, but can it actually explode or cause fire?
Apparently the lithium ions can.
Yeah, again, the size of the battery is going to determine how much current it can supply, and it's a tiny battery in the iPod.
All you need is a tiny flame to catch the plastic on fire. That's what I'm saying.
Well, 450, what is it, Fahrenheit 453?
451.
451,
that's for paper.
Yeah. Well, he caught paper on fire, right?
No, he caught the iPod itself was melted. It was clearly, I mean, if you see the video, it's clearly, the case is cracked, the iPod is melted.
I don't dispute that it was on fire. I question what caused the fire.
Well, whatever, but the point is that's
pocket lint.
Well, sure,
if you got pocket lint. You know,
all I know is I just went out and bought a pocket clip, a belt clip for my iPod. It's a lot. All right, our next cut. That's more in the way of a cautionary tale than anything else. You know, maybe we should all go out and get the pocket clips or the armband clips or the whatever that is. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Well, I did something stupid.
Really? Thank God you admit it, Rob. Bob, that's God bless you for
join
that.
Join the club.
We've all done it. Most people say, "Oh, my cousin
you
or my uncle
your,
or
a trash can, and you want it back."
Yeah, the recycle bin on my desktop. I accidentally deleted it, and I don't know how to get that in.
All right, go to control panel under display. You click on display, and you click on desktop.
Right, I'm under Vista too.
So it's different.
It's the same idea. It's just going to be in a slightly
different
place.
Delete the desktop or the recycle.
No, you can't delete it as such, but you can make it disappear.
Yeah, but what you're going to do is under the display, you're looking for your desktop settings, and there's a customizing desktop. And in there, I don't have a Vista machine with me, but you can select whether you want to show the folder for my documents, my computer, my network, Internet Explorer. You can also make sure you restore the defaults, like the trash can.
It's under control panel. Just find the desktop.
Yeah, you're looking for the desktop items in Vista. See, again, there's another thing against Vista. You know, they had things in, whether it was Windows 98, Windows ME, Windows 2000, Windows XP. Things were where they were. And just to create confusion.
Yeah, for like 15 years.
He just had to rearrange things, and there was no need to it. There was no logical reason to move some of the stuff that they did. It's just utter confusion.
All right,
I'm sorry. I was supposed to be off my med.
I know you're supposed to be napping now, yeah. Uncle Dave. Anyway, give that a try. Thanks. Our next caller, Dave from Webster, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Yes, I need to get an antivirus program on my computer, and there's way too many choices. I have no idea what to do.
I suggest one of two, either AVG, which is at grisoft.com, G-R-I-S-O-F-T, or Avast at avast.com, A-V-A-S-T, as in R, be hearties.
Okay.
Right now, I kind of like Avast. It seems to do more. Both of those have free versions. They also have pay versions that automate certain things. So in both of them, you're spending a lot of time by hand, right? Updating it. They work and they're free, but you do a little updating on your own. If you buy them, they automate a lot of that stuff for you. And I always suggest paying.
Who's your internet provider?
It's Roadrunner. They come with a free one. I think it's from Computer Associates.
Yeah, they give you a free one too. Well, it's not bad.
It's not that great.
Not that great.
Yeah.
I heard Zone Alarm recommended on the morning show about a week ago.
Yes, Zone Alarm is a good product.
But that's not,
that is
an,
not
antivirus.
That is a firewall.
I don't even know the difference. I got to get Avast for all the protection. That'll take care of everything.
No. Well, Avast don't.
There's five different protections you need, and you need a separate program for each.
Okay.
So you've got an antivirus.
Check with the Security Tangle.
Okay.
Yeah, the Security Tangle website, securitytango.com.
Explains all the things that you really need.
Okay. All right, thank you very
securitytango.com. There you go. All right, thank you so much. Our next caller, Gary. From Williamson, New York.
Hi, guys. Your suggestion on changing the screen colors?
Yeah.
The problem with that is that almost any programmer worth his salt that's writing viruses out there is going to read your system colors and display it the same color.
Most of them don't, because most of those are just HTML code.
Okay, well,
and most of the viruses aren't written by virus writers. They're script kiddies taking someone else's code.
Right.
So they're not very good programmers.
Right. But most of them really won't make the change. All of the ones I have seen on my Linux box look like the standard blue banner with the red close button.
Well, on the Linux box, they wouldn't be finding the system colors in the same place either. But on a Windows box, which is another reason not to be running a Windows box.
Well, there's that.
There's a standard place to find the system colors.
So yes, there is. And if somebody wrote a program that smart, I'd be astounded, honestly. Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, don't tell anybody.
Right, don't tell anybody, for God's sake, Terry.
I'm developing software, so I know right where to go, but I'd like to find a way to reach through the screen and grab these virus people by the throat.
Yeah, my favorite thought is that one of our guys, B-O-F-H, has always said what he wants is to be able to hit a button and send an electrical charge through the keyboard.
That was a Larry Niven story. Gil Hamilton, the long arm of the law.
I like the long arm of the law.
You come up with that program, I'll buy a copy.
All right, it's a deal.
Take care.
Thanks. That's Larry Niven. All right, our next caller is Bob from Greece. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi, this is for Nick, and I'm just wondering if you still send out the Nick Light email.
I do, but apparently there's been a bit of a problem with them for a while, and nobody told me.
And I haven't been getting one since like a year ago.
Yeah, I heard about that. Somebody finally. Earlier this week, and I just, my hope is I'll get to it this afternoon.
Everyone expecting someone else will report it.
Yeah, exactly. What's happening is I already told you about the Ask Nick website, and I send out a couple emails a week from Ask Nick to members, and then one a week to the Nick Light people. But apparently there's been a small problem with the Nick Light mailing list. I get my copy. Apparently a lot of people have not been getting theirs, and how am I supposed to know that if nobody tells me?
Now we're telling you.
Okay, I will fix it. Thank you, Bob.
Is the problem at your end, though, or could it be with our email people?
I suspect it's somewhere in my code. I hate to say that.
Well, actually, I've been hearing a lot of reports lately about people that aren't getting messages they used to, and I think it could be the mail servers have instituted newer spam filters. And so if you're on a mailing list, mailing lists are a very common false positive for getting marked as spam. So maybe right. The more stringent spam filters are catching more people that are supposed to be on a mailing list.
That's possible. But I will be looking into that this afternoon. I actually hope it is my problem because it's easier for me to fix my problem than to fix the other. Right.
Right. I don't know how to diagnose the other end.
Yeah, I know it. Well, I will be working on that today.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Bob. And thank you for your patience.
Now, can you fix ODBC errors? We started getting ODBC errors on our web shopping store this week. We didn't change anything at our end, but trying to upload new products, we get ODBC errors. So something changed at the other end.
Something changed at the other end. There's no way around that.
I'm afraid it's their way of forcing us to buy the upgrade.
Yeah. All right. Our next caller is Brad from Victor, New York. Welcome, Brad. What's your question?
We've got a situation where AOL has upgraded their virus protection from their security system to a full McAfee.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. So I downloaded the new McAfee, and now AOL won't let me get on. I uninstalled the McAfee. AOL works fine.
Mm-hmm.
Go on AOL, no problem. Reload the McAfee. Everything works fine until I sign off. And when I try to sign back on again, it won't work again.
I got to be honest. I used to be the biggest fan of McAfee there was in the whole world. And then they just started to get too freaking big. Instead of doing antivirus, which they do incredibly well, they decided they wanted to do everything. Yeah. And now, somewhere along the line, they've made it so big, so unwieldy, so painful. It eats 80% of my CPU resources while it's running. I hate it. That's why we're now recommending AVG or Avast as your antivirus program. Again, there are free versions and pay versions. They're much lighter weight. They do one thing and do it really well.
Well, AVG is so good that the New York State Commission for the Blind has me put it on all their folks' machines.
You get that from AVG.com?
Yep. Grisoft.com. GRISOFT.com.
Okay, and then the Avast?
From Avast.com. And both of those are linked at the SecurityTango.com.
And if I do that, then I won't, should not have this problem.
You shouldn't, no.
You may have different problems.
Yeah, right. Yeah. One of those problems.
All right. No guarantees in life on that one.
Well, we'll give it a shot.
All right, thanks. Brad. Our next caller is Bob from Webster, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Well, wanted to pass on something first. I just bought a wonderful product from Circuit City from Ion, I-O-N. It's a turntable, which you USB cable into your machine, and you can put 33 and 45 records on it, and it brings it right into iTunes. Works great.
Yeah, I have that same product, and I love it.
But there is supposed to be a way there that you can go ahead and load cassette tapes into it, and I cannot make it work. And I was wondering if there's some other product out there you might know that would let you do this with cassette tapes.
Well, there are several. The version of the Ion I have doesn't have a cassette loader in it, so I don't know about that part. But
you almost shouldn't need anything. You take your cassette tape player that you probably already have.
Yes.
Plug the output from the cassette deck to the input on the Mac and record it.
Oh, Mac, but I haven't got a Mac.
Oh, well, on your
same with the PC. Any sound card.
Probably has a line in on the back of the sound card.
Yeah, on the back of the sound card, you should have at the very least three ports, one for the microphone, one for the headphones, and the third marked line in.
Although, if you're coming out from the headphone jack on a tape player, you'd want to go into the microphone jack.
Wouldn't it be the black one?
That would be the same impedance levels. If you have a line out on your tape deck, then you go to the line in on the sound card.
Right, but if you have only a headphone jack, you go from the headphone to the microphone.
All right, I see. No, the turntable I have does have a jack that you can plug into, but what I found out after trying all kinds of things, you plug something in there, don't even turn on the tape player, and it will create a file in iTunes, but there's nothing in it, so when you play the thing, it doesn't seem to make any difference. You build a file, it's got a size to it.
That could be the line-in, mic-in level. Does it say on the turntable whether that's a line-in or a mic-in?
No, it doesn't.
You have to look in the manual.
Yeah, if you're only going again from the headphone out on the tape deck, you may need a preamp to amplify that to line level.
You might have to check his settings in his sound card, too.
Yeah, whether it's accepting line-in or mic-in.
And that they've been... Right. You know, not
but
muted
that's
or
that's
lowered.
The way it works. And actually, going from cassette tapes is actually
we should let our audio guy answer some of this.
Yeah, what do you think?
What do I know?
We have Chris Reich, who is an audio guy, and he generously gives us his time every week. And here we are, just talking over him. Go ahead.
Well, I was letting you guys do my job for me. It's wonderful. It's what I used to do in my profession as well. But I see we're going out for a break. So should we pick this up later, or
we'll pick this up when we come back? In just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Lins, and me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Now, before we go back to the phones, our sound guy, Chris Reich, actually has a real, definitive, professional answer.
Well, thank you, Nick. Yeah, we did a little homework during the break, and it appears as though this this Ion turntable has a line input as well as being able to play your vinyl discs. That's great. So if you have a stereo cassette recorder or recorder and player, it's got to have line outputs undoubtedly on the back. And it may or may not be labeled as such as line outs. You should see two, we call them RCA or pin plugs, the same connectors that you would use to connect to your stereo receiver. Instead of connecting that to your receiver, go into the input, the line inputs of this Ion turntable. And apparently, the turntable, you probably have to turn something on. I don't know if there's a switch or something. Look in the manual. And the internal A to D, the analog to digital converter of the turntable that normally works by converting or works to convert your vinyl signal to digital, will convert your line input signal to digital and send it to your computer.
There we are.
So the problem is probably if you're plugging your cassette deck's headphone jack into the turntable, that's only a mic level or headphone level. And that's too low a level for the machine to pick up any sound. So it's recording what it thinks is the sound. That's why you're getting a file, but there's not enough level there.
There you go. That would explain it.
And the beauty of such a system is your line in can be any source. You can play a radio into it or anything else that you'll, an 8-track.
Anything that has line out.
Yes. And almost everything does.
8-tracks.
Why not?
Why not?
Now, if you already have a turntable or cassette deck on your stereo, you don't necessarily need to buy these. A USB turntable. You know, if you already have a turntable, just you plug the line out on your stereo to the line in on your computer and record.
Now, assuming they're near each other.
Yeah.
That's the reason I got this thing. Yeah. Stereo's downstairs. Upstairs is just, the Mac is the PC is the...
Yeah. What's interesting is that the turntable comes with Audacity for sound recording. And that's a really great free sound recording and editing program for Linux, Mac, and Windows.
Yep. Great program. All right, our next caller is Jeff on a cell phone who wants to talk about cassette transfer. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Actually, I don't have a question, just wanted to input. There's actually a product that will mount right into your the tower, just where your CD drive is.
Right.
So instead of your CD drive, and you can put a cassette tape into it. So it looks like it's a cross between a CD drive and a car radio is in your dash. I'm not sure your policy or anything. I've seen a couple of them. I know one of them, I know where you can get it, and it goes for about, I think, 70 or 80 bucks.
Right.
I can tell you if you want where you can get it, but I'm not sure. That's okay?
Yeah.
Okay. It's called geek.com. It's Computer Geek.
Yep.
It's kind of like a TJ Maxx with computer stuff.
Yep.
But they've got them there.
Yeah, there's a couple places that sell them in there. ThinkGeek has them
as well. ThinkGeek, yeah. And what's the other one?
Yeah,
well, RC Toys is the other one for geeks.
Oh, yeah. But, so thank you, Jeff. Yeah, you can actually stick this thing into your machine like another drive, into your desktop like another drive, and then you put the cassette right in there just like you would a CD or a floppy disk.
That's slick, but I still want one for my mom's old 8-tracks.
Yeah, that's right. Now you still need the 8-track thing.
I had an 8-track recorder on my stereo when I was a kid.
Ooh.
So I converted all my LPs to 8-tracks.
Yeah, now we're talking. All right, our next caller is Wally from Honey Eye Falls, New York. Welcome, Wally. What's your question?
Gentlemen, here's my question. My son has a new PC that has an NVIDIA video card, and it has an S-Video jack on the back and says it can do video capture, but the documentation is next to useless. It says just hook up your, hook the video source in and turn on your favorite capture software. Well, I've tried about 5 or 6 different sample versions of capture software, and nothing seems to recognize the video signal. Now, it's coming from an analog video camera. My wonder is, do you think that this might be only set up to take digital signal?
No, S-Video is only analog. You cannot do digital over S-Video. What I'd be interested to know is whether, are you sure that's an in and not an out? Because a lot of times the cards will have an S-Video out, so you can plug in a television to your computer.
No, it said to hook it up. I mean, I believe it's S-Video. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, but if the software says you can record your favorite programs, you record stuff through it.
Yeah.
And it's probably an S-Video in.
The usual big trick is in the recording software is picking the right input. So it has to know about your card. It's surprising that the card didn't come with its own recording software.
Yeah, it didn't come with anything. I looked on the CD that came with it and for the drivers and everything, and it's nothing.
Are you running Windows?
Yes, XP. My other thought would be to get something that would be an all-in-one, like a Turtle Beach, something like that, because I have a fair amount of video I want to convert.
All right, Wally, hold on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Got to take a quick break, so stay on the line. We'll come right back to you. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 50 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 54 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. And the theory is we still have Wally on the line.
And I'm Wally.
And there's and I'm Wally.
Rob is good.
Okay, so go ahead. You were...
We had a couple of questions. Now, are you saying it's not capturing video at all, or the video it captures is low quality?
No, not at all. It's the card came with a cable that I can plug that has an RCA jack, which is what's coming out of the video camera, and it goes into what I believe is S video.
An RCA to composite to S video adapter is common for cameras that don't have S video out.
Yeah, it's an older Sony. The quality is terrific. I've been taping my son's football games, so.
But it's got to be a setting in the software to tell it where to capture from. Or a driver for the card to tell the software there is a capture device.
Yep, if you go to nothing in the driver. I mean, I'm pretty experienced, so.
If you go to the device manager, does it show a video capture device as a device?
No.
Do you know what version of the NVIDIA card you have?
Catalyst, I believe. It's pretty new. I mean, he's had the computer for less than 6 months.
We're thinking it's a software configuration issue, either in the driver telling the computer there's a capture card or the software not knowing which port to capture from.
Yeah, well, any of the software I've tried, and I don't know the names at this point because it was about a month ago, even when I had a choice, when I go to tell it where to select, there's no choices show up.
Yeah, so that means it's anything. A driver issue. There's no driver telling the computer there is a capture card. The problem is NVIDIA doesn't make drivers for the end users. They're an OEM company, so the OEMs have to write the driver for the system they put the card in.
Exactly. And do you think I'd be better off with something like a Turtle Beach, which has this all in one?
Well, the thing
that,
is...
What's the one we sell? The Pyro AV Link that has digital and analog in and out.
The problem is that may be an S-Video out.
The documentation says... hook up your video source to this, and you'll be able to capture.
Yeah, but you may be capturing what comes out of the video card.
Yeah, but you said they didn't even provide you with any software capture.
They may not be saying you captured into the computer. They may be saying you captured into the video recorder.
Try it the other way. Set your camera to record and see if you get the computer screen on your camera.
Exactly. Okay. So it may be that you have an S-Video out.
Well, either way, it's very unclear.
Right. So yeah. I would say if you get a real capture card, you're better off.
Okay. All right, gentlemen, I appreciate the help.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Our next caller, Chris, from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Basically, my computer has very low disk space available.
Yeah.
And in trying to free up some space, I might have done some bad things.
How many hundreds of millions of times have we heard that?
But now it's not finding anything as far as my DVD Plus, my Sonic. But basically, what my main question is as far as the disk space, I go through the temp files and stuff like that, and that's all deleted, but it still comes up to where I still don't have a lot of disk space.
You may have to get a bigger hard drive. You just may have
or
to
get
make
an external.
An external
hard drive.
You've
got a lot of music and pictures and that type of stuff. Right. Move it over.
There's a great utility on the Mac called WhatSize that scans all of your folders and gives you a nice directory of the size of every folder. Is anything like that under Windows?
Yes. If you go to PCWorld.com, you've got a bunch of utility.
Yeah, because you can go to every folder and do properties on it, and it will tell you how big that folder is. But it's nice to have something to go the whole hard drive.
Well, the first thing to do really is to burn to CD any pictures or audio you've got and then pull it off of that drive and see if that gives you a lot of space.
That usually eats up the most.
Yeah. We are done for another week.
Now, I want to do a properties on my pictures and see how big that is compared to your drive.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Chris Reich, the world famous Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank each of you who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Next week, you'll have to call earlier and more often. And we will be back next week. Chris is diligently working on the archive, so those will be up as soon as possible. I'm diligently working on the code for the RSS feed, so we will get all of that up. Want to thank everybody. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel, with the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM, 59 minutes after the hour. So long.